will ever own, guaranteed.
Welcome to America Tonight. I'm Kate Delaney. If you haven't heard the show before, we rock and roll all over the place. Zig and zag, as I like to call it. Don't care about your political stripes. Just make sure you have an opinion if you want to jump in. And boy, is there a lot to opine about. And we're going to do that right from the get-go. First of all, here in the United States, we are a very long, long, long ways away from Libya. But you should be concerned, my friends, as to what is happening over there, because your government is spending tons of money. Every stroke on the clock, every missile that is fired, we're paying for it. Ultimately, forget about the spending cuts that the Republicans came up with, because that's done. It's almost out. It's gone. And at this point, when you see that the Fed says that the U.S. is in approaching insolvency, you just ask yourself, how do we get to this point? And the answer is greed. Pure selfishness. Go back to the banks, too big to fail, in 2008, and follow the dots. And I do think we are at a critical point. We cannot continue down the path that we're on right now. The Dallas Federal Reserve Bank president, a guy named Richard Fisher, did a question and answer session. He did a speech at the University of Frankfurt and was asked about what's happening in the United States. And he's saying the short-term negotiations are very important. And he's right. They are very important. So when we get involved with Libya and decide to embark down that course, down that path, more money is being spent. The president now is saying that Gaddafi might try to wait out a no-fly zone and military assault, basically, that's hit his armed forces but hasn't completely annihilated them. So he is hunkering down. Of course he is. At this point, the U.S. is saying, our government, that we're ready to hand this off. Basically, we're handing this off. So Gaddafi has been the man who has ruled Libya for 41 years. Who are the replacement players? Who's coming in to take over? And are we supporting who that is? So there are some possible measures. That's the best word to use. It's such a throwaway word, but talking with the people, partners in the coalition as to what to do. And the best quote I think I saw was this one. This is from the press. I think our hope is the first thing that can happen once we've cleared the space is that the rebels are able to start discussing how they organize themselves, how they articulate their aspirations for the Libyan people and create a legitimate government. Well, what is that legitimate government? What's the legitimate government for Libya? I'll tell you what, to be honest, now looking back at this, initially I would have said, why didn't we just get in here, blow the thing up, boom, handle it? But as the weeks dragged on and that didn't happen, I definitely changed my mind on this, especially adding up the numbers. Does the U.S. really need to be in this Libyan situation and be so vague about it? Why not let Europe take care of it? So is it fair and should we be? And this is something you have to ask yourself, taxpayers, Americans. We wave the precious flag of freedom, and I cherish those freedoms. Thank God I live in America. I love it. I do. I grew up in the cradle of liberty. Maybe that's why. That was always made such an impression on me. I love the history. Walking by Ben Franklin's house, or at least the fake outline they have of it. going by the first post office, looking at the old battlefields, and thinking about the sacrifices that were made. So is it our duty? Are we the world's police department? Is that what the United States is supposed to be? Or should we have not, in the end, gotten involved in this? Okay, to re-rack here, it's supposed to be a humanitarian mission. Our lead admiral is saying, look, we're not trying to take Gaddafi out. We're not trying to come up with a regime change. He just has to do what the UN resolution spells out. And that means give the people water and electricity and all those things. If that happens, then we're done. We're out of here. That's the objective. That's what we're here for. That's what we're supposed to do in this situation. I'm going to switch gears quickly because this is weighing heavily on my mind. A lot of people are talking about nuclear energy. And you're starting to hear the hum of, oh, look what happened in Japan. We can't have we can't have that here. Fukushima, we can't have that same thing happen to us. And, of course, the answer is not to build where you think. Clearly, there could be some seismic activity. Now, no one can definitely say, okay, absolutely, there wouldn't have, you know, all signs point that this wouldn't happen here. But give me a break. We have enough people that know how to map this out that we can clearly feel confident there are some areas where it's a little bit safer than on the California coast to build some of these plants. That's why there was a moratorium on the building there. I've said this before, but I lived near Diablo Canyon in San Luis Obispo. Really, it's Avila. That's that beach town, and it's on the hill there. It just sort of looms over there. Occasionally, it is the site for a lot of protests, but the bottom line is it is in a rather precarious position, even though PG&E, who runs that plant, says, oh, no, it's okay. So I think there's a right time to pause and think about nuclear energy, but I don't think that the push to develop more nuclear energy should be thwarted because of what's happened in Japan. And speaking of that, boy, those people talk about talking out of two sides of your mouth. How many times did they hear that, oh, it's looking like, you know, hey, we're starting to make some real progress here. It's starting to look pretty good that we're going to get a handle on this, get all the electricity back and cool down these reactors, and baloney. The people were told one thing, and I don't think that was really the truth. So now the tap water in Tokyo has been tested a couple of times, and it's tested two times above the limit for radioactive iodine considered safe for infants. And there are also lots of concerns about food and other drink as that power plant, Fukushima, continues to leak radiation. So what do you think, America? Do you trust in the development of nuclear energy here in this country, that the people in power do the right thing and push forward with it, but really watch the checks and balances, really keep an eye on it, and make sure it isn't built in an area where it shouldn't be built? That's the key. That should have never been built where it was in Japan. Stay with us.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
month. Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amounts. Hurry. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy. The best you can buy.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com. Each and every show, I always say, at some point, send me your thoughts. You're working, part of that third shift crew, driving your truck. You don't really want to reach for your cell phone. You're not doing the hands-free thing. But you're thinking about some of the things that people are saying and some of the guests, and you're just curious about something with the show. And I always say, send me your thoughts, right? So you do that. A lot of you do that. AmericaTonight.net. In fact, every day I have to go in, no lie, and clean out the mailbox. And it's all good stuff. It's not like junk mail anymore. Like the serious hard mail. You know, when you go to your mailbox to get the mail, and it used to be you'd get letters or postcards or whatever. And how disappointing is it? It's nothing but junk mail. And now the junk mail is clever. It looks official. So you feel like you have to open it up. Without further ado, let's go check our mail.
This chamber has no windows and no doors.
You have mail, mistress.
I did feel like I was in a dungeon there for a second. All right, I do have mail. So this one is from Paul, listening to us on WVMT. And Paul says, Kate, what's the scoop with the radiation? Do you think the people in Japan should be worried? What about the people in California? I keep reading stories about Californians freaking out about radiation. Ultimately, does it hit Tokyo? What do you think? Well, let's hope it doesn't hit Tokyo. Of course, you're talking about you're talking about areas that are on the coastline, and what is happening so far enough away. It's well beyond the 50-mile radius, which is what the U.S. nuclear scientific community came up with, and others involved in nuclear threats and whatnot. But what is, I think what's scary is the fact that so many of the people that lived close, 20 miles in, you know, even 30 miles in, whatever, were told, oh, don't worry, with the radiation, because it's, first of all, it looks like the plant, we're shoring everything up, no worries there. And now they're wanding people all over the place. You know, I say wanding, but testing them for levels of radiation. So all those people who thought as they were weathering, losing their family, how did I survive, the earthquake, the tsunami, then get the scare of their life when they're told, oh, on second thought, we're having some problems here at the plant. You need to evacuate if you can. You need to get away from the area. So people, luckily, are heeding that advice at this point. But it just goes to show you, you have to think about the source, and you have to think about what they're trying to protect. The guy who owns this nuclear power plant was crying in front of the camera heading into the weekend. He's demoralized. He can't believe it's happening. But they should have had, first of all, they shouldn't have built the plant there, but they should have warned the people. They should have cut a bigger swath, told people immediately, tried to help them evacuate, get them out of there, instead of dragging their heels on it, trying to say, oh, it's, you know, it looks like we've cooled off all the reactors, everything's looking pretty good, blah, blah, blah. The impact that's probably going to be felt by some of the people, because who knows down the pike what they could develop. It's always that fear of cancer or something else. You just don't know with some of those children, some of those older people that were there. And certainly with the food, we know that there are problems with the food. And this quake that happened, by the way, altered the Earth's surface. We've already talked about that. And geologists are saying it's putting a different stress on a different segment of the fault line closer to Tokyo. So the hits just keep on coming when it has to do with the earthquake, tsunami, and now the nuclear power plant is still trying to figure out what's going to happen. They're going to close it, but they're still trying to contain the radiation leaks. That's what's so scary. What's going into the water, all that sort of stuff. All right, let's move to another one. This one is from Chip, who says, Kate, I know this seems so frivolous in the midst of everything that's happening in Libya and the rest of the Middle East and in Japan. Your heart just goes out to those poor people, and hopefully a lot of Americans will do whatever they can to support them financially and give to some of these organizations. But I can't help it. I have to ask you about Charlie Sheen. What's the deal with Charlie Sheen and 2 and a Half Men? I think I heard on the radio that he might be coming back. Well, it's interesting. NBC News, I think, broke the story, and they're saying that he might come back, that CBS has at least offered him his job on 2 and a Half Men. They haven't come up with a deal, but they're discussing it. So he could be back on the tube. Boy, it makes you think, wouldn't this be a great setup if they did that? You know, just have this whole Charlie Sheen thing happen, and then ultimately knowing that he was going to get all this coverage and then just have the ratings soar, almost like a reality show. That's what happens with these reality shows. Kooky, weird things happen, crazy things happen that people follow. That's why people were so enamored of The Bachelor and Survivor, some of the original shows, and now it continues to, you turn on Bravo or any of those other stations, and they have how many reality shows. So the answer is he might be coming back to the tube. And if he does, you can bet he'll get a huge pay increase. But the network, it's like a cash cow for them. And it would be even more of a cash cow now that people are watching what's going on with Charlie Sheen. And he's doing these live shows. So, yeah, it's crazy. All right, back to more serious matters. This one from Jake in Austin. I can't believe what we're hearing out of Libya. Isn't the idea to take Gaddafi out Kate, how can they say they have no intention of changing the regime? Isn't that a flat-out lie? It makes no sense to me. The whole no-fly zone is really expanding into a regime change. How can they deny it? Well, the answer is it's so dicey because of the UN situation, meaning it's a resolution. The resolution was over the no-fly zone, as you said, and now, really, it's war. It's war. They're trying to shellack Gaddafi, so he's the guy in power. And the U.S. military might say, and they might have their admiral say, the Navy admiral say, that they're not trying to change the regime there, that all they want is the humanitarian side of this solved. No firing on civilians, food and water and all that stuff, and, you know, ultimately electricity restored. But, you know, I'm just not buying so much what they're selling. What do they do? There is no plan. That's the answer. What do they do if there is the stalemate and Gaddafi just doesn't go? What do they do? All right, here's our last one, and this one is from Ann, who's listening to us in Illinois. Hello, Kate. I've been listening to you. I used to call the show. I'm sorry. I've been really super swamped, but I'm going to try again. I've been working from home. Thank goodness. It took me 8 months to find a job. I know people in your audience can relate to that. Here's my question. What is the scoop on the light bulb? I heard something. I just caught the tail end of it, that the Republicans are trying to block some sort of new light bulb restriction. What's that all about? Yes, it's true. They want to overturn something crazy that's been happening. It's called they want to overturn the Energy Independence and Security Act, I guess, that dates back a couple of years ago, that would encourage people who shop, the consumers, to use a different kind of light bulb, something that's more energy efficient, the fluorescent light bulbs, saying that that Americans can decide, you know, to use this and ultimately save the environment by using something that's more energy efficient. I mean, here's the scoop. Here's the problem with this. Have you ever had one of those lights? I can't see with them. I hate to say that. Maybe I'm just buying the wrong ones. I had a few of them. But it's so silly. Why are we wasting time on these light bulbs now? We have serious fish to fry. So why are we wasting time on this? Going back and forth on what kind of light bulbs to use? Can't you and I decide what we want to buy? Can't we just decide the kind of light bulbs we want? Yeah, you want to encourage energy saving, whatever. I think that's great. Fine. But to make a law to get rid of light bulbs and only have the more expensive energy efficient light bulbs? Give me a break. More on Libya coming up around the bend.
Extend your life with Extendo Voice.
Hi, my name's Russ, and after my heart attack, I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I needed to keep on working, but now it's becoming a problem. I heard about these garlic cayenne drops and hoped it would help me. Well, I've been taking them for about 4 months, and the way I'm feeling now, I can see how I just might make it to retirement, thanks to Extendivite.
My name's Don Wiskin, and I want you to know Extendivite works. If you're looking for more energy or just want to be as healthy as you can, now is the time to join the growing list of real people benefiting from Extendivite. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Becoming a modern smoker is now easier and more cost-effective, thanks to LeSig. Traditional smokers the world over love LeSig. E-cigarettes with a look, feel, and taste of real cigarettes, but without the nasty smoke, ashes, or stains. LeSig is powered by revolutionary microelectronic technology. A small, rechargeable battery and unique replaceable cartridge provide all the satisfaction and benefits of smoking without the smoke and all the hazards. See the large variety of LeSig e-cigarette supplies and accessories at LeSig.com. That's LeSig.com. LeSig is competitively priced, comes with the best customer service, a 30-day warranty, and satisfaction guaranteed. What a great gift idea. For a 10% discount, mention GCN when you call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Ask for fast, free, same-day shipping. Order online at LeSig.com and use promo code GCN at checkout. That's LeSig.com. LeSig, for today's modern smoker.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
The collapse of the dollar is imminent. You can protect your wealth by buying gold, silver, and strong foreign currencies, but what if the government confiscates your precious metals, implements exchange controls, or nationalizes your retirement? You need a backup plan. That's why you must move your wealth into an offshore asset protection structure. Go to collapseproof.com to get your free special report and discover how to store your gold and silver in the world's safest vaults, or how to hold foreign currencies in a way that's safe from bank failures, bank runs, or exchange controls. Learn how the U.S. government failed to collect a $36 million claim because the defendant legally used an offshore asset protection program. This is what you need to keep your wealth safe when the dollar collapses, and CollapseProof.com can help. Our programs are 100% compliant with U.S. law, but you must act now before it's too late. Call 800-798-2008. That's 800-798-2008. CollapseProof.com. Asset protection in financially unsafe times.
America tonight. We're kind of like a box of Cracker Jacks. You never know what you're going to get. We're talking about Libya, the UN resolution, and a slew of other things. And we're switching gears and we're going to Hollywood. Kate Delaney, as always, happy to be at the helm or the skipper of this ship. Remember, you can always throw in your 2 cents, even with Steven. If you want to throw something Steven's way, he's waiting in the wings, Steven Shohev, our man in Hollywood, you can do that. 800-259-5791. There's always so much to talk about. What with Charlie Sheen, the latest I heard, CBS wooing him back? Of course they are, because let's just say he goes back to Two and a Half Men. Imagine the rubberneckers. What would that audience expand to? They already had a big audience. Stephen Shohat, the author of Hollywood Stories. You can catch his blog by the same name. Stephen, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Kate?
That big news about Charlie Sheen before we dive into a couple of other things. I'm not surprised by that because money makes the world turn around in a lot of places, and especially when it comes to television and movies. If he were to go back, they would make, I think, that much more money.
You know what? I'm not surprised at it either. It's just, I mean, I don't know if it can happen, but, what we talked about, that show was created about him. I mean, losing him is ripping the heart out of the show. The way agencies in Hollywood, the way they make their money, you can't get much bigger than a show that has years and years of repeat value, where all the costs are done and you can play it over and over and over. It's a risk to replace Charlie Sheen with, say, Rob Lowe. I mean, CBS is still making money after all these years off I Love Lucy. So, and also you wonder, you know, if they ended like this, if eventually there might be a fear that maybe the rerun value of the show would go down because you know, people have a bad feeling about Charlie Sheen. It might be better for everybody to make peace. So, you know, it's not a shock.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, second chances don't always happen when you strike out, kind of lay in the weeds for a few years, get a lukewarm response and come back to the big screen, at least directing, and then you blow it again with a bunch of crazy nonsense. Mel Gibson, who has so many pictures, I mean, all the Lethal Weapon, Braveheart to me, The Patriot were some of his best, and of course, he had the anti-Semitic rant with the cop in Malibu that knocked him off the map, and then with the girlfriend and divorcing his wife. I don't think so much about divorcing his wife, but the girlfriend and the claims and the allegations and all the other nutty stuff. It's been a wild soap opera-y ride for Mel Gibson, hasn't it, in the last 7-8 years?
You know, it's been that way throughout his whole career. It's just more focused on a little bit right now. I mean, there were always little stories and rumors going around about him when he was on location, for example, making the movies The Bounty or Air America, you know, about extramarital affairs and things like that. And, you know, I probably wouldn't say that except he's, you know, just become so public with this current event. And now he's got the new movie coming out called The Beaver, and why he's which is being made with his very loyal friend Jodie Foster, who they co-starred in the movie Maverick years ago and got along splendidly. And why the movie is out there, he really is not in a good position to go out there and promote it because of his legal problems. So he's kind of staying under the radar, just put his house up for sale. I mean, Hollywood is a community that, you know, at the forefront is dominated by Jewish people in a lot of instances. And Mel Gibson was actually fired by his agent. Now, you don't hear about that too much. You know, you hear the other way around. And his agent, very, very powerful man named Ari Emanuel. And if people watch the TV show Entourage, the character of Ari on that show is based on Ari Emanuel. And, you know, what happened was a couple of years ago, Ari Emanuel, after Mel Gibson's anti-Semitic rant, said that no agency should represent him. Well, then Ari Emanuel's agency, Endeavor, ended up merging with William Morris, who was representing Mel Gibson. So by default, Ari Emanuel sort of had to swallow, you know, his pride and take Mel Gibson on as a client. Well, when Mel Gibson had some more legal problems and Mel Gibson's personal agent passed on, then Ari decided to drop him and fire him. And so the doors in Hollywood for Mel have been really closed in a lot of ways. I mean, the Beaver's kind of an independent film fighting for distribution. Of course, Mel was dropped from The Hangover, too. So, you know, as far as personal working relationships, it's going to be hard because there's this negative feeling of him in the Hollywood community. Now, can he come back with the public? I think so. I think the public will still like him. I mean, I watched an interview with him where he was actually talking about having his extramarital affair and having a baby by another woman, and the people were applauding. You know, I mean, they were still rooting for him. So, you know, stardom is a popular, is a powerful thing, and the cult of personality is a powerful thing. And there's ways to come back nowadays that people didn't have years ago. Like, you can get on Saturday Night Live, maybe, and make fun of yourself, or get on The Simpsons, and, you know, something like that, to get noticed and, you know, be lighthearted and apologize and things like that. like that. The interesting thing is I think it's going to be tougher for him, like I said, to get the working community of Hollywood to be on his side more than the public, maybe.
Yep. Yeah, no kidding. And it's strange how things turn around, because as you sent a note to me and you jogged my memory, it's the 25th anniversary of a big movie, Stand By Me, right?
Yeah, Stand By Me. And, yeah, that was 25 years ago. And, of course, it was actually 29 years ago when Stephen King wrote it, part of a book with four stories in it called Different Seasons. The story was actually called The Body. And it was very autobiographical for Stephen King. And it really, even though it's four kids in search of a body, it really had no horror elements, or at least no supernatural elements in it. So it was a different thing for Stephen King. And Rob Reiner happened to read it and really identified with it. And Stephen King, he had made the story not about the main character, Gordy. He was kind of an observer and had based it on the other characters, especially the character that River Phoenix ended up playing. And when Rob Reiner was casting it, he decided to not pick kids for their acting, but pick kids who were really like the characters that they were playing. And River Phoenix's character is kind of a peacemaker, and he came from sort of a hippie family. That's how River Phoenix described them. Will Wheaton was, very intellectual and well-read. And Corey Feldman had come from a broken home, kind of like his character. And Jerry O'Connell was just crazy. He was a crazy kid. He came in there thinking, I'm going to meet Archie Bunker. I'm going to meet Archie Bunker. Hey, wait a minute. I'm meeting Meathead. So... Yeah, and so they all sort of fit their characters, and then they were terrorized on the set by Kiefer Sutherland, who decided to stay in character even when he was off camera. And the chemistry between them all worked really great. And of course, it's very ironic and sad that River Phoenix's character, who doesn't have a great final fate in the movie, of course, in real life, River Phoenix, a few years after that movie came out, and he was starting to achieve major stardom, ended up dying at the Viper Room Club in West Hollywood in 1993.
Yeah, no kidding. We only have a couple of minutes left, and I thought I'd throw this out to you, because we always, on the show, we do little cheap movie reviews. We have you on, and we talk about the box office cha-ching. We're heading into the big box office time of the year, aren't we? When you get into the summer, you hit May, and you get into the summer. That's when a lot of blockbusters come out, right?
Yeah, ever since the movie Jaws came out in 1975, they have these movies called the tentpoles, which means that they do so well blockbuster-wise, hopefully they can finance all the other products that the studios put out in theory. So I think, for example, Thor, might be a movie. The Kenneth Branagh directed Thor might be a movie that falls into that category this year, and some others as well.
Yeah, no kidding. Stephen Shohat, always a pleasure to talk to you. Tell us about your blog, how we can see the cool things that you blog about.
Well, I actually have by the way, my article did make it into Big Hollywood. I don't know if you call it a blog. I actually write articles. They're all on my website, hollywoodstories.com, and people can also, there's like 54 articles on there about Hollywood, and people can also find out about my book, which is called Hollywood Stories: Short Entertaining Anecdotes About the Stars and Legends of the Movies. It's got over 1,000 anecdotes in it about movie stars, producers, directors, available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any bookstore. All the information is at hollywoodstories.com, and you'll have a real good time if you go there.
Absolutely. Stephen, thank you so much. Congratulations on the article getting picked up, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Oh, you got it. Thank you.
Stephen Shohat, our Hollywood insider, he joins us on Tuesdays. It's an interesting time, because then we're getting ready for the movies of the week. He talked about The Beaver, the Mel Gibson movie. That's coming out in May. And if you're curious, The Beaver, what are you thinking that movie's about? It's about a husband who adopts a hand puppet that's a beaver. And that's the only way that he communicates. Who directed this movie? Jodie Foster. And as Stephen was saying, Jodie Foster is the one person in Hollywood that keeps standing by him and saying that they're friends and some of the stuff is exaggerated and he's a great guy and all that other sort of stuff. You can always reach us on the show by going to americatonight.net. Facebook that way, Twitter that way. We have a blog every single day about all the water cooler buzz and what you missed and all that stuff. Plus, you can shoot me an email through the website, too, at americatonight.net.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 5 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $220. And the Berkey guy will include three Sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three Sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping. An $87 value, yours free. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com. Today.
Daddy, I'm hungry.
That little girl will get fed, for now. But what if people like Glenn Beck are right about the threats we face? If the U.S. dollar loses its status as the global reserve currency, prices on the things you need most will skyrocket. Food may be unaffordable, or worse, unavailable. Earthquakes, economic turmoil, continuing unemployment, rampant inflation, and even threats of terrorism are all reasons to let the experts at Ready Reserve Foods help you with a long-term food storage plan. Ready Reserve Foods has been a premier supplier of long-term storage foods for 37 years. Their unique process assures the highest quality long-term food storage available worldwide. Their products have a shelf life of 25 years, and a year's supply of quality food for two people only takes up about as much space as a refrigerator for a fraction of what you now pay at the grocery store. You owe it to your family to find out more from Ready Reserve Foods. Call today for their free full-color catalog at 1-800-453-2202. That's 1-800-453-2202.
Sore throat? Spray that with Dermatol. Diaper rash? Spray that with Dermatol.
Ouch!
Burn or cut? Spray that with Dermatol for shockingly fast relief. If you had room for only one first aid product in your preparedness kit, you need Dermatol because it works on almost every skin irritation or injury. All natural Dermatol brings amazing relief to burns, cuts, scrapes, bites, boils, shingles, rashes, elderly skin tears, even chronic diabetic ulcers and bed sores. Dermatol is an all-natural, antimicrobial, antiviral, and antifungal wound cleanser that speeds healing with no side effects. It's safe for all ages and skin types, and is even safe enough to spray on sore throats or onto sore eyes. Read our many testimonials at Dermatol.com, spelled D-E-R-M-A-T-O-L.com. Order online at Dermatol.com or call 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. Effective, efficient, economical. Spray it all with Dermatol.
You love the people that love you. You hear the music they move to. You give your all to the ball. But you don't know.
Continuing the debate over what is happening in Libya and this mission in the first place, going from the no-fly zone to, let's face it, a war. What happened from last week to this week has been stunning, I think. You even have Ohio Congressman, we were just talking about that, Dennis Kucinich, saying, yeah, this is maybe impeachment territory. Why wasn't Congress involved in this? But we can even re-rack this and go to the UN and how far the Security Council resolution went. Definitely far beyond the bounds of a no-fly zone. Someone who I think agrees with me on this is Phyllis Bennis, fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, also the author of a book called Calling the Shots, How Washington Dominates Today's UN. Phyllis, thanks for joining us on ATN.
Great to be with you.
So what was your initial reaction when the story broke over the weekend? I mean, we knew what happened at the UN, and then boom, right away, President Obama has a press conference. Next thing you know, by the beginning of the week, we have Tomahawk missiles that we're talking about, 112 of them. What happened? Is this, like I said, far beyond the bounds, of what that resolution calls for?
Well, in certain ways, it's not. The stunning part to me was what was in that resolution. Because if, you know, you remember that when we were first hearing about this, the U.S. was kind of reticent. The U.S. was saying, you know, we don't really think that a no-fly zone is going to work. They didn't say it, but what's true is it's never worked in the past. No reason to think it would this time. Mm-hmm. In Iraq, it led to the deaths of over 700 civilians. In Bosnia, it led to the Srebrenica massacre that occurred right under the plains of the no-fly zone. Didn't help protect people at all. But that was what was originally on the plan. That was the original draft by the British and the French. It was a draft for a no-fly zone. The U.S. was saying, we don't think so. We don't think it's going to work very well. So instead of saying, and therefore we're not going to support it, they said, therefore we're going to rewrite it. And they took the resolution and came back with it on Tuesday, took the vote on Wednesday night. This was an extraordinary thing because the new resolution that the U.S. redrafted went way beyond the idea of a no-fly zone to include the crucial language, all necessary measures, which basically means no limit, any kind of military force that you want. The only restriction, and they're very cautious, they're not really very strong restrictions at all. One said there cannot be a foreign occupation force in Libya. Now, that's a good thing that there's that restriction, but it doesn't really mean much because that's a very specific definition. And we know that, like, even in, say, Afghanistan, where the U.S. has 100,000 troops, tens of thousands of U.S.-paid mercenaries, that's not considered an occupation.
Right.
Troops on the ground fighting is not prohibited. They can be there. The only other restriction, and this one is important, said that the military force is for the purpose of protecting civilians. And that means it was not for the purpose of regime change. The problem that we have is that you have governments leading the military strikes, the U.S., the Brits, and the French, all of whose top leaders are saying, Gaddafi must go. He has no credibility left. We want him out. We want regime change. But don't worry. Our military actions are not aimed at regime change. They are within the bounds of the UN resolution. Separately, we have other things in mind, whether sanctions, whether something else designed to get Gaddafi out. Now, the problem is it's the same government doing both things. So the notion that there's somehow this bright light dividing what's regime change and what's protecting civilians, that's what really doesn't work. That's where you get to the problem.
Yeah, no kidding. Tricky language. We're speaking with Phyllis Venice, author of the book, as I mentioned, Calling the Shots, How Washington Dominates Today's UN. And the title of your book goes with what you're just saying here. The U.S. steps in, rewrites it, redrafts that resolution, essentially declaring war on Libya, right? Declaring war on Libya.
Indeed.
With everything we just said.
It is almost a declaration of war in not quite that many words, but almost. And what we're seeing now is clearly the U.S., the Brits, and the French joining a civil war. That's really what it's starting to look like. The U.S. and the Brits and the French are coming in on one side of a civil war. Now, granted, this was not an even playing field. This was not even sides in Libya. The democratic opposition movement that had sprung up about a month ago, which originally was a nonviolent civilian movement like all the others in the region, very quickly took up arms to defend themselves. That's made it very different than the other revolutionary processes in Egypt and in Tunisia, and even in the ones that are under enormous pressure now in Yemen and in Bahrain and elsewhere in Syria, where the call is peaceful, peaceful, peaceful. In Libya, very quickly, after the regime attacked, the military divided, the military split, and a big chunk of the military went over to the other side, defected with their weapons. So this is a strong, armed, military movement, very different than the others. And it's not to say they have the same weapons. They don't. The best weapons are still with Gaddafi's forces, the best trained soldiers, etc. But this is not an unarmed, vulnerable population in the same way. In fact, there was an interesting thing. That first French airstrike, which was, what, I guess Saturday morning,
yeah,
that hit the tanks outside of Benghazi. The reason those tanks were out in the desert outside of the city, because they had been in the city, they had attacked the city, they were driven out by the military power of the opposition force, by themselves. They are actually stronger than I think we give them credit for.
Yeah.
So the notion that if the U.S. didn't send those troops right away, or send those planes right away, that somehow they were all going to be massacred, that's not at all clear. They were fighting back pretty well.
Yeah, I agree. What, and people listening to this all across the country, why should they sit up and start to pay attention to what's going on at the U.N. and with these resolutions and what's happening in the Middle East? Why should American citizens be concerned?
You know, we live in an incredibly interconnected world. And when people around the world are not secure, when there are wars, when there are shortages of water or shortages of oil, all those things come back to bite us.
Mm.
And when we have foreign policies that people around the world think are unfair or that they are based on double standards and hypocrisy, we pay a price for that. We, American people, not only our government, it's not just that people don't like our foreign policy. It means that we as Americans are sometimes hated. You know, we ask that question so often, why do they hate us? And we get, frankly, sometimes pretty stupid answers. They hate us because of our freedom. Well, they, whoever we want to say they are for the moment, they don't hate our freedoms. They hate that we take away their freedoms.
Right.
Their freedoms may not be the same as ours. We, you know, they don't want the same things necessarily that we do. But that's not our call. That's not our business. You know, I'm hearing from some people now some questions about, well, so who is this Libyan opposition anyway? Do we really want to be fighting for them? And I'm saying, well, look, you know, we don't know exactly who all these folks are, nor did we know in Egypt, nor did we know in Tunisia. They're mixed up groups of all kinds of different people. And when they take power, which I hope is soon, I mean, I really do, even though I don't want this militarization of it to go on. I think it's going to make things worse and not better. But I do hope they win. And when they do, they're going to be a very different kind of government than what we probably are anticipating now. And are we going to like it? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But we don't live there. We're not Libyans. You know, we don't get to say what kind of a government they should have.
Yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Phyllis, one last one. We got like a minute and change left. I know this is tough to answer this, but just give me a quick one on this. Yemen is becoming, it already is a hornet's nest, but man, they're getting blown apart too. So after having this happen in Libya, geez, what happens next?
Well, I hope that what's next is not military force being talked about, and I'm pretty sure it won't be because the U.S. has been very dependent on that dictatorial government to help out in the so-called global war on terror. That's where you see the double standard, but I hope the answer is not more militarization, but less. Let me add just one last quick thing. The other reason we need to be thinking about what's going on in the Middle East, these wars are not free. This is now our third war, and we can't afford it. The Tomahawk missiles alone cost $1 million apiece. That's $110 million just for the Tomahawks that first day, not even counting the cost of the ships and the planes and the troops. We can't afford this. One last soundbite to leave you with. The state deficit in Wisconsin, where all this fight back is taking place, that state deficit is $1.8 billion. That's a lot of money. It's not chump change. The money that people in Wisconsin will spend this year on tax money, just enough for their share of the war in Afghanistan, almost the exact same amount, $1.7 billion. If we didn't have a war in Afghanistan, we probably wouldn't have that kind of a state deficit in Wisconsin.
Yeah, amen. I agree with you. Interesting conversation. Terrific stuff. Phyllis Bennis, fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. And check out the book, Calling the Shots, How Washington Dominates Today's UN. Phyllis, thanks so much for joining us on ATN.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.